and welcome to the McHale Report podcast. My name is John McHale, Group Editorial Director for Military Embedded System and host for today's event. Our podcast today is sponsored by Pentek, a leading manufacturer of embedded boards and recording systems serving the defense market. As one of the original COTS vendors, Pentek has been involved in developing open architecture standards for almost 20 years. The company is committed to the support and development of modular open system standard architectures, as seen with key contributions to VITA, PICMEG, and now the SOSA standard. Pentek is an active member with leadership roles in the SOSA consortium, technical and business working groups. To find out more about Pentek and SOSA, visit www.pentek.com/SOSA, S-O-S-A, SOSA. And let's get started. So today, I'm here with my colleague, Emma Helfrich, who's our associate editor for Military Embedded Systems Magazine, and we're going to talk open architecture initiatives, specifically how they were covered at two events last month that we both attended in Georgia, called Embedded Tech Trends and the Tri-Services Open Architecture Interoperability Demonstration. And in the spirit of acronyms, they are also known as ETT and TISOA. And as I said, both were held at the Georgia Tech Research Institute. Our guest later in the show, Roger Hosking, a VP and co-founder of Pentek, will discuss even more details on SOSA and the demo, as he led a presentation during ETT on SOSA and is heavily involved in the development of that standard. First, we're going to give you the impressions of our two favorite journalists at Military Embedded Systems, and hopefully they'll be here soon. I'm kidding. Emma, I thought that, you know, obviously open standards are always covered at this event, but this year the presentations more than ever are covering artificial intelligence, machine learning topics. Was that your impression too?
Definitely. And it was exciting to see as well, since my beat here at Military Embedded Systems is going to be very AI focused. I also saw a lot on space, satellites. It seems like in general, all of these companies are just pushing themselves closer and closer to the edge.
Yeah, it is. And in artificial intelligence, from what I saw, is about the sorting through and filtering all that information that's generated by the computer systems that they're making for signal processing systems, for whether it's radar or electronic warfare. And there's so much information, so much data being collected, artificial intelligence powered by signal processing engines and RAID algorithms, et cetera, are going to be really used to filter a lot of that data that's coming through. So speaking of open standards, a lot of this year in the past, ETT has had a mix of folks who cover telecommunications, IoT, et cetera. But this year it was a military focus, and I think that was primarily because of the tri-service demonstration that was happening the next day. And I say tri-services, I'm talking Army, Air Force, and Navy folks were putting on a demonstration of open architecture, specifically products aligned to the SOSA standard, which stands for Sensor Open Systems Architecture. It's not finalized yet. The technical standard will happen later this year, but a lot of it, the alignment is being done. And the basic idea is you can take any board that is designed with this tweak, and whether it's designed for the other standards or acronym SOOP, which is the host or hardware open systems technology, CMOS, Victory, et cetera, it will work with any other system. You can plug it out of an electronic warfare box and plug it into a radar one, as long as it meets those particular specifications or interfaces. I've been covering this market for a couple decades, and I've never seen such enthusiasm from not only industry, but also the government and the primes. And I think a big reason for that is the three services are heavily involved in the standardization itself. They're joining the groups. They're members of VITA. They're pushing the primes to play in this little sandbox.
Exactly.
That's the enthusiasm. And when I'm talking about the organization specifically within each branch of the services, in the Army, it's the Combat Capabilities Development Command, also known as CCDC, C5ISR Center. This is all formerly CERDEC. The Air Force Research Laboratory out of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and the Naval Air Systems Command, NAVAIR, out of Maryland. And that enthusiasm is really what I've seen as a difference. And I rewrote a column about it on our website, and then someone retweeted or put it on LinkedIn, and his name was Dean Holman. Dean made a comment I thought was kind of echoed what I said. He's led the VITA Standards Organization as a chairman for the past decade and been a contributing member for close to 20 years. And he said he has seen the support from contributions from major primes wax and wane over the years. And we are currently on an upswing in their participation. He firmly believes, he says, that it's due to the motivation the DoD end users have applied. He said he was at the demonstration too. He said it was great to hear the Navy, Air Force, and Army leadership speak of the necessity for standardization. And this is his quote: "Our warfighters deserve the best we can provide, and standards help provide that in a shorter period of time." This is what we're talking about. We're talking about speeding up that not only the acquisition process, but the deployment process. And unfortunately, speeding things up is a slow process. So what we're now, and I know you were really interested in, if everybody's gonna, well, you had OpenVPX, which was came out 15 so years ago, which created a lot of different profiles. It was open, it was an open architecture, but it had a lot of different ways it can go. There are a lot of products created under that standard. So, but the government says they just want one or two that they can meet, they can choose from, and plug and play with different people, different companies. And I know you asked a question during one of the press meetings about, well, isn't that going to impact competition? What did you hear back?
Right. So my main goal during the tri-service demonstration was to listen and attempt to understand, being so new to the industry and everything. So one of the biggest, I guess, criticisms of standardization and SOSA was that companies were concerned about it stifling competition. And the demonstration really answered that for me by saying that it wouldn't necessarily stifle it, but it would in fact encourage it. Companies need competition. Pepsi needs Coke. That same concept is just going to really encourage a lot of innovation within the industry.
Oh, that's so true. And I know Dr. Lipkin, he's running the SOSA. He works for the Air Force, but he's kind of the chair of the or the lead for the SOSA consortium. And during the actual demonstration, a journalist asked a question about, well, if I design this board for host, if I design it for SOSA, for CMOS, is it going to make a difference? And you know, and Ilya, he's got a really nice way about him. He basically said, I don't care. In the end, it doesn't matter whether your single board computer is designed under any of these particular open architecture initiatives. They will all work.
Exactly.
They just need a tweak, and they are all compatible. You know, and something Dr. Lipkin said to me a couple of years ago, and about this enthusiasm, he tells me that standards groups succeed or fail based on the enthusiasm of their volunteers. Using this metric, and basically on what we saw, I say this tri-service approach will in fact succeed as the passion of the members is real. But what do you think?
It just seemed to really be a hub of innovation. It encouraged companies to conjure up new and exciting ways to power the US military, all while being supplemented with these money and time-saving standards that SOSA and all of these other standardization efforts offer.
Yeah, and so the enthusiasm is there because, unfortunately, as much as there's enthusiasm, it's not all rainbows and unicorns. There is still a challenge there, and it's a cultural challenge. I've asked this question multiple times to different folks from the government, from industry, from the suppliers, the primes. Usually, I get politically correct answers. It's basically that the primes are really the roadblock here, and there's enthusiastic members of the primes that are part of this initiative, social initiatives, but there's also folks that don't want to change it. And they work perfectly fine. Why do I need to change? Why do I need to share my secret sauce? That's what they're worried about. And so, and then during the keynote presentation, I think it was Randall Walden was with the Air Force Rapid Capabilities Office, whose job is to get stuff out more quickly. And he mentioned how the primes have had a stranglehold on this basic acquisition process for years. And so I asked him during the Q&A part, can you elaborate a little more on that? And he said the primes are tied to a 20th century business model, and they don't want to change as they fear it'll put them out of business. Finally, I got an answer to that question that was pretty straightforward. He gave an example, which was interesting. The F-35 and the F-22 fifth generation fighter planes, we've all heard of them, both are built by Lockheed Martin. And despite having that shared builder, the aircraft couldn't speak to each other. They didn't use the same data link. Walden had brought in the leaders of the company and said, you got to fix this. And they did, in fact, resolve it and now communicate. But that was kind of a maybe an extreme example of where the proprietary nature of how the primes are doing business was creating a problem for the end user and the ultimate end user, the American taxpayer. So that resistance to change is, and also is not just at the prime level. There are elements within the services that like that paradigm, that 20th century paradigm. It's where they feel at home. It's their culture. Although Walden said that they're getting the message, it's once again a slow process. But they're starting to see that they can make money with the new business model and that it really is better for everyone. They had a great slide early on in the FACE, Future Airborne Capability Environment standard. Now they were being pushing it to get adoption by the Air Force. And I was at a meeting for that, and they had this slide up, one of the presentations. It showed the F-35 program soaring really high on a graph that this is unaffordable in the future. To have new platforms with this capability, you've got to bring the affordability down. And the way to do that is with open standards and basically what SOSA is, host, CMOS, and different examples, and the people they're working with, and you need industry to do it. I thought what Walden said, you can't rely on the government because the government is horribly set at creating standards. But the industry is pretty good at it, and it's nice to see the government joining in that process by joining those different developments. So industry is actually doing this. So you still have one foot on the ground because you know the resistance is there, and it's a strong resistance to change, but it is moving forward. And I think because the end user wants it this much and is this, and they're working together, it's not just the Air Force by itself or the Army, that's going to make a big difference.
Exactly.
Any final thoughts from you on that demonstration before we turn it over to the next segment of our podcast with Roger?
I guess just thank you for having me on the podcast. Thank you to everyone that I met at ETT and the Tri-Service demo for being so welcoming. And enjoy the rest of the podcast.
All right. Thank you very much. And before we get to our next section, just a little note from our sponsor, Pentek, a leading manufacturer of embedded boards and recording systems serving the defense market. As one of the original COTS vendors, Pentek has been involved in developing open architecture standards for almost 20 years. Pentek is committed to support and development of modular open standard architectures, as seen with key contributions to VITA, PICMEG, and now the SOSA standard. The company is an active member with leadership roles in the SOSA Consortium Technical and Business Working Groups. Find out more about Pentek and SOSA, visit www.pentek.com/SOSA. Thanks, Emma, and on to our next guest. Our guest today is Roger Hosking, Vice President and co-founder of Pentek. Roger's joining us after he spoke at the Embedded Tech Trends Conference in Atlanta last month on the SOSA initiative, and which was the whole conference itself was immediately followed by the Tri-Services Open Architecture Interoperability Demonstration, which was held at the Georgia Tech Research Institute and was put on by the three services, the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force, to showcase the advantages of SOSA and other open architecture efforts. And Roger, I know you've been talking about this. You gave a whole presentation on it at the ETT conference. But why does this effort, and you and I have been doing this a long time, seem to be so different in terms of momentum than other initiatives in the past? Is it the participation of the services themselves, passion among players, economics? What do you think?
Well, it's really all of those, and it's just that the extent of interest in each of those areas is much greater than we've ever seen before. I think one of the things that's extremely noticeable as a difference is the government participation, not only in getting the three services, the U.S. Army, Air Force, and the Navy, to kind of come together to in recognition of the fact that they must have a common standard in order to take advantage of procurement opportunities more effectively, more efficiently, you know, shorter delays, and easier procurements, and so forth. So it benefits them, and they're actually putting their money where their mouth is by saying, we are not only going to join, but we're going to actively promote and participate in this joint SOSA standard within our organizations, and then be very actively involved in the open group. SOSA consortium, which is the one that's developing the technical standard, and then will become the basis for procurements for each of the services.
Thanks, Roger. Yeah, I was really struck by the passion behind this, the enthusiasm. I've seen other efforts over the years that it just one service does it, doesn't want to work with the other one, or what have you. But there are still some cultural challenges. And during the keynote presentation, I was particularly interested in the presentation by Randall Walden, who's a member of the Senior Executive Service and Director and Program Executive Officer for the Air Force's Rapid Capabilities Office. And I asked him a question I've asked a lot of other people, and I talked about it earlier in our podcast with my colleague Emma, is the primes themselves. I can't believe all of them are thrilled about this because they're kind of going to lose out on some of their proprietary stuff. And his response was, yes, they have a stranglehold on the services, and they're stuck to a 20th century business paradigm. But once we start showing them that in the long run, they're going to make more money this way. They're coming around. But he did say it's going to take some time. Have you seen some of that? I mean, I definitely see the enthusiasm from the primes who are members and pushing for it. What have you seen on your end?
Yes. You know, one of the things that has dominated some of the hesitancy in terms of the primes joining into some of these standards is the fact that they lose their proprietary lock on customers, and that's basically what the government was complaining about there. And I think one of the nice things that SOSA offers is it allows vendors and primes to protect their intellectual property by defining the products such that the products are consist of modules, which are often called, you know, gray boxes that will have a certain function with a well-defined input, a well-defined output, and a well-defined function within the box, but exactly how that function is performed within the box, what kind, what technologies, what algorithms, what codes, and so forth are in there, that is something that is kept proprietary to each of the vendors, not only vendors like Pentek, a board vendor, but also to some of the IP, the system IP and software that goes into the higher level user interfaces that the primes add to their products. And I think by having that part of the equation of SOSA is now all of a sudden making some of those primes a little bit more willing to join in and play, because it's to their benefit if a prime if a large government contract request for bid, request for proposal includes the mandate that you have you have to be SOSA compliant or aligned, then they will definitely want to bid on it. And now they've got a less painful way for them to justify why they should go all in for those kinds of bids.
Yeah, and you mentioned it before. I think once the technical standard is ready, it's going to be aligned with the technical standard is the terminology they're using to kind of be different than, let's say, complying with other standards. It's going to be more aligned with,
yeah,
kind of the way to stand apart. But
I do have to be careful. And the other significant part is that each of the players who are contributing, you know, products to the SOSA standard must have to have conformance testing, which is a rather rigorous process that previously didn't exist. By this testing has to be done by a third party, and so that then is quite different as well. So it's a way of making sure that everybody is really playing fair and that they really pay attention to the requirements of the technical standard.
Yeah, and the participation, as I said, the second day, I mean, you gave your presentation, Embedded Tech Trends. And for those of our audience who don't know, Embedded Tech Trends is it's put on by members of the embedded community, members of the VITA standards organization, as well as PICMEG and others, to kind of discuss and meet with the press latest products, trends in the industry. And of course, SOSA dominated that, as it was the day before the tri-services demo. And a lot of the companies at ETT also participated in the demo, including Pentek and including some of the primes. And I was pressed. We were fortunate to get in ahead of time, so we got a little private tour, but there was a big crowd behind us. How was your demo or demos received at the event?
Well, there were really two areas. There was an exhibit area, and then there was a demo area, and both of them were really just packed with people, visitors coming in to see what it is, what it's about, and wanting to get the latest information. So, in the demonstration area, we participated with other vendors that were there, other SOSA members, to show interoperability among different products from different vendors of different types. We had chassis vendors, we had single board computer vendors, we had switch board vendors, we had FPGA product vendors, which we represented, and even some of the intelligent platform management software developers. One of them was there as well, all demonstrating their capabilities and how they would, could prove by this interoperability demo that they could have different vendors in the same chassis and playing with each other successfully.
Speaking of OpenVPX, there were too many options to open to end users, which was the common complaint we heard from different meetings in the last year or two from the end user, the military. With SOSA, there would only be a couple of options, which is what they wanted. But does that impact competition in any way? Is it harder for you to differentiate as a supplier of these SOSA aligned boards or products?
In one way, yes, and in another way, no. First of all, by having a very limited number of hardware platforms in terms of their different configuration and IOs, and particularly the backplane connections, which are really one of the toughest parts that the SOSA consortium is really trying to define. What you have to do then is have everybody kind of working with the same slot profile to define how their boards are going to play and interoperate with other boards from different vendors that will have the same slot profile. So hardware is hardware, but then what's inside of your board and how you do your signal processing, for example, how do you do your acquisition if it's a payload board? How do you do your acquisition of antenna RF signals, for example, and how do you present those signals, you know, to the outside world, and how efficient are you, and what kind of pre-processing can you do inside that box? That is IP that is protected on your board, and that is where, you know, you could have your, you know, a major advantage over another vendor in terms of the intellectual property that is still compliant on the outside envelope with the SOSA technical standard, but which is quite innovative in terms of its internal, both hardware and code, FPGA code, and even some middleware code that vendor might add.
And speaking of competition, traditionally over the last, since really the COTS manual came out in 94, the biggest competitor to COTS suppliers have been primes and system integrators that roll their own, so to speak, single board computers, daughter cards, etc. Will that still be the case? Will primes be rolling their own SOSA products that are aligned with the SOSA standard? Do you see that in competition?
Yeah, it'll be a combination. I mean, many primes will have, for example, their own single board computer. Some of them will have other devices like switches and RF interfaces. So there will be a mix. And yet, what that mix does is it still allows smaller, for example, suppliers to the primes that can compete in terms of cost and innovation with the primes, so that the prime might actually decide, hey, for this bid, I'm actually going to go outside and use a more clever solution than the one I currently have that'll get me to my delivery point a lot more efficiently and effectively than if I were to try to do more work on my product that isn't quite as clever and as efficient, and I might even have to use more boards of my product in this particular application versus a third-party product that has the right, you know, the right combination of resources that will make it a more efficient overall system, and thereby make my bid as a prime to the government more attractive.
Thanks. And I'm kind of going to go back a little bit here. We talked about the open standards, the government being involved in it, the primes kind of becoming more open to it. Everybody gets to still have their secret sauce, so to speak. But speaking of secret sauce, it also makes me think of a slide that you had in your presentation, which talked about SOSA and how it applies to classified programs. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, sure. First of all, the SOSA standard itself uses other standards, uses the best of other standards, and adopts certain pieces of it, subsets, certain qualifications on other standards. One of those main standards, of course, for hardware is the VITA standard, the Open VPX VITA 65, and several derivatives for that.
And VITA is a member of the SOSA consortium, aren't
they? It is a member. However, as we know, the SOSA consortium is restricted to membership for U.S. companies, and the VITA organization is a worldwide organization with members from everywhere. And so the concern and the reason that the SOSA consortium was constrained to U.S. companies was so that they could discuss sensitive classified requirements and programs and develop the right strategy for how the technical standard could be configured so that those functions within that special requirement could be handled with products that were conformant with the SOSA standard or aligned with the SOSA standard. Now, the way that works is that those requirements of the hardware can be stated without the reason for those special features to be disclosed outside of SOSA. However, those requirements, and so what it does is it allows those requirements to flow over to VITA as a recommendation or a suggestion for a new option to perhaps an existing VITA standard that then could be adopted by SOSA and then become part of its technical standard without revealing the sensitive nature of why that particular hardware configuration was created.
But, you know, kind of as we wrap up here a little bit, what's next for SOSA? When should we expect a technical standard, you know, SOSA 1.0 to be done? And how will you guys participate in that at Pentek?
Well, we are very actively involved in the technical working group and the hardware subcommittee. So that is something that we're kind of like a co-lead in the hardware subcommittee, which really goes at the kind of the hardest part of trying to get all the boards defined, the I/O and backplanes and interoperability, compatibility, those and as well as conformance testing. That's another big piece that's still in play, to have that third party testing be well defined and effective. So what's happening? We're expecting that the Snapshot 3, which is the third version of the preliminary SOSA standard, will be released in April of this year, 2020. We expect then within we're not sure, maybe 4 to 6 months, the 1.0, which would be the first released version of the technical standard, SOSA's technical standard, would then be done. Again, it's going to go through a lot of, a lot of analysis and discussion during those months between the Snapshot 3 and the release. And it could take longer or less, depending on how those go. But that's kind of the next major milestone. Well, two milestones, the Snapshot 3 release and then the technical standard 1.0, hopefully sometime before the end of 2020.
Well, I know standards never go as fast as you'd like them to. And it's a little bit, it's ironic to get the acquisition process sped up through these type of standards. It's going to take time. So,
it is, and yet we're still seeing procurements coming from the government now, even though they can't claim that you have to be completely conformant with the SOSA standard, or you can be aligned to it. And I think the awards will then be favored for those respondents who are aligned to the SOSA technical standard as it is today. That's happening already. We're seeing that. So that is going to accelerate it'll put a little pressure, if you want, on the getting that final 1.0 technical standard released. And the pressure will be coming from the government as well as from all the vendors who want to have something that they can start really going into, committing designs that now can be fully SOSA products.
I agree completely, and I think the enthusiasm is going along in those routes.
Yep.
I'm pretty excited about it. Well, thank you, Roger. Excellent chat. I'm very excited about the SOSA initiative. I think it's going to save a lot of money for the taxpayers at the end. I thought the demo went over very well. I also really, as I said earlier with Emma in the first part of the podcast, I really got a lot out of the keynote session. Thanks again. We'll see you on future podcasts, see you in future articles about SOSA. Thanks to Pentek, our sponsor. Pentek is a leading manufacturer of embedded boards and recording systems serving the defense market. As one of the original COTS vendors, Pentek has been involved in developing open architecture standards for almost 20 years. The company is committed to the support and development of modular open standard architectures, as seen with key contributions to the VITA, PICMEG, and now the SOSA standard. Pentek is an active member with leadership roles in the SOSA Consortium, technical and business working groups. To find out more about Pentek and SOSA, visit www.pentek.com/SOSA. Thank you all for listening to today's McHale Report podcast. Look forward to seeing you in future podcasts.